My affiliation is a little bit wonky. I'm a contractor at Facebook, but they're one of a small handful of customers. I should start by saying, and nothing that I say should be construed as official Facebook, blah, 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 blah. You know how that thing goes. But I'll be extremely surprised if by the end of the presentation I don't say something that I shouldn't say with regard to that. And now it's your job to ask the questions that will get me to trip up. So that gives you something extra to do. I came up with this talk a couple of years ago when I read an awful book called $20 a Gallon, which was a description of what happens to the economy when gasoline is $6 a gallon and $8, $10, $12. Those are the chapters, just $10, $12, $14, $16, $18, $20. And it was a shallow book. The analysis wasn't very insightful. It didn't go very deep. It wasn't very a very compelling story. But I really liked the format. But being a programmer, linear scales aren't interesting. So I turned it into a logarithmic scale and applied it to software, and something happened that I really didn't expect. So I've been talking about ideas in software engineering that have been pretty controversial for I don't know, 15 years now. And I've gotten kind of used to these through the looking glass kind of conversations where I'll say something to someone and they'll try to repeat what I just said, but they'll reverse the polarity of what I just said. And I'll, no. So I'm saying that programmers need to be trusted to test their own work. Yes, I understand. You can't trust programmers to test their own work. No. And it's really hard to have a productive conversation. You're using the same words, but they really mean completely different things. So I've been baffled for a long time about how to have a productive conversation when somehow the concepts seem so completely different, even though on the surface they're very similar. When I took this idea of software engineering at different speeds, that was my logarithmic scale. What if you deploy software once a year? What if you deploy once a quarter, once a month, once a week, once a day, once an hour? That's the scale that I'm looking at. What I discovered is as soon as I created that lens so I could talk about software development at all these different scales, many of these bizarre disconnects in conversations, they didn't go away. I was going to say they don't go away, but at least they come into focus. So person A can say you have to have a QA department, and person B can say you can't have a QA department, and they can both be right, and they can both talk if you have this frame around it that says, I'm deploying once a quarter, and having a QA department really made that possible. And someone else can say, oh, I'm deploying once a day, and getting rid of the QA department really made that possible. And both stories can be absolutely true, and now we can dig into the details of, like, all the good answers all start with it depends. So do you need a QA department? It depends, but what does it depend on? As soon as you start having that conversation, then it's productive. Then you can make some kind of progress. I'm used to giving this talk to a slightly different, slightly less geeky audience. So I'll make one more analogy for you guys, which is not only do you get these kind of, this is a guy on a rocket sled undergoing 13 Gs. Sounds fun for somebody else, but you know, and his face gets all distorted, and that's kind of the analogy that I wanted to make. As software development goes faster and faster, it's extremely painful. No, that's not the one. It's the shape changes. But I think a deeper analogy is the one to relativity, where really the fundamental shape of things changes as you approach the speed of light. The straight lines aren't straight lines anymore, and things that are parallel aren't parallel, and stuff wraps around in weird kind of ways as you get close to the speed of light. And for me, the same thing is true in software, that the more frequently you deploy, the more the shape of what constitutes good engineering gets changed and twisted. And there's a logic at every speed that says something about what the shape of good software engineering is. So for some time now, I've noticed this kind of shift in the average deployment cycle. This is not data, by the way. This is just me kind of thinking with pictures. So if somebody wants to come up with the data and explain how I'm all wrong and stuff, that would be really cool. 20 years ago, lots of software was deployed once a year, once every 3 years. You know, you'd get a update from Microsoft, and every 3 years a great big box would land on your desk. But the deployment cycles were biased towards those kind of timescales. A year, you know, the more progressive teams would be releasing once a quarter. And out there in that crazy fringe, there were some people who were deploying hourly. This is like a bond trader would have a programmer sitting right next to him. Things would go crazy in the bond market, and the bond trader would start throwing things at the programmer, and the programmer would type furiously and figure out a program to analyze what the new situation looked like. The bond trader would make, you know, $12 bazillion in the next 15 minutes, and then everything would change again. So there were these kind of extremely tight deployment cycles, but only at the very fringe. Very few people were actually accomplishing it. They used a very special technology stack that wasn't very general purpose. Usually it revolved around spreadsheets. The reliability requirements were extremely low. You know, because if you miss this $1 billion, you'll get another $1 billion in the afternoon. So it's okay if the stuff crashes. I mean, if it just stays up for 5 minutes or works one time in three, that's fine. So it's really the crazy fringe, but it already existed. And William Gibson has this great quote, "The future's already here, it's just not evenly distributed." This was the edge of the wedge, that if you were looking for it, when I heard that story, my nose started to twitch, and I'm thinking, I'm living in this once a year, you know, 3 months of design, 5 months of development, you know, 4 months of testing, try to pack that into 10 months somehow, that kind of life. But this seems like the way things are going. Today, it's starting to shift. You still see software developed on these kind of slower cycles, but really tight deployment cycles now aren't crazy fringe stuff. It's not rocket science to do that. It can happen at very large scales, scales in terms of numbers of users, in terms of system complexity, in terms of the sizes of the teams. All those things are starting to grow, but they're still the big bulk of stuff that happens at kind of monthly kind of pace or quarterly kind of pace. Even Windows now, I get the updates, or the Mac OS, I get the updates every couple of months or once a month or every 2 weeks, depending on how many security flaws whoever found this week. But the deployment cycle, even of large, complicated software, has gotten much shorter. So things are starting to shift. Now, out at this fringe, this sort of hourly deployment, a lot of things have to change. You know, you can't ship out a CD every hour, but fortunately, we're beyond CDs and we're beyond installation, for the most part, on client machines. So if you're running a website, there aren't technical reasons why you can't deploy that frequently. There might be lots of other reasons, and they could be good reasons, at least at the moment, but even big sites can be deploying multiple times per day. So the excuses not to deploy more frequently, they're starting to break down. And my expectation is that looking forward, the bulk of the deployment cycle is going to go to really short cycles. Now, I wrote these slides a couple of years ago, and just looking at them now, I think I'm too conservative. I think that the shift is really going to be towards daily and hourly deployment. As we learn how to teach engineers how to do it, as we learn how to build the infrastructure necessary to create it, as we learn the business practices necessary to both support and exploit those kind of really, really short cycles, there's just so many advantages if you work at that, at these shorter time cycles, that I expect that it's going to change. Now, I've been guilty of over-optimism in cultural change in the past, so maybe that's wishful thinking, but it's interesting to play with for me and think about, okay, well, let's say that 90% of software is deployed hourly in 20 years. What has to happen between now and then for that to be true? Quick survey, how many people, and I'll go through the timescales, how many people deploy software, and I mean like a feature deployment, not like, oh my goodness, the hackers have attacked and the whole world's Western civilization is about to collapse, but the like, here's some more functionality. How many people do that once a year or more? I mean, once a year or less frequently? How many people once a quarter? Monthly? Weekly? Daily? Hourly? Okay. So, I mean, that's fairly consistent with this. I mean, it's shifting. There aren't very many people left who are doing it once a year, but you get to the lunatic fringe, the hourly deployments, and you don't get to see so many of those. So that's how I think. I try to think in terms of big trends because I want to be ahead of the wave surfing and not, what's the opposite? Well, behind the wave sitting there getting sunburned or something. It's not a very good analogy. I'll try and get you guys a good analogy before this is all over, I promise. Anyway, but that's the big shift. The deployment cycles are just getting shorter and shorter and shorter because there's so many advantages to the short deployment cycle. There's costs that come along with them, and there's cultural change and technical change that are required, but that's just the trend, and bucking the trend, I've always make more progress if I figure out what the trend is and then push that direction than try and start something completely new. So, by the way, you're welcome to ask questions at any time as far as I'm concerned. I'd rather have you clarify something that everybody else is also wondering about than ignore the rest of my talk while you're thinking about the thing that you wished you'd asked. So feel free to stand up. And I'll be at the Facebook booth for an hour afterwards. If you want to come up and you don't want to talk in front of all these people and stuff, that's fine too. And we do have an hour and a half for the whole presentation, which is nice. That's a long time. time for me to give this presentation. So if you don't ask questions, then I have to fill in a bunch of like corny farmer jokes and stuff, and you don't want that to happen. So I'm going to share responsibility with this for this with you. So the bulk of the talk is my observations about the transitions between the cycles. So if there is this trend from annual to quarterly, monthly, weekly, daily, hourly deployment, if that's just kind of the way people are tending to slide, what changes in software development as you move between these transitions? Software development has a habit of thinking it's got things figured out. Right, okay, so here's the methodology, and none of this it depends stuff. No, here's how you do it, which is interesting. And then somebody will lay out exactly how you do software development. Well, there's so much context to any of those kind of prescriptions that an answer like that is, you can just toss, because there's, without thinking about the factors that make those things true, it's hard to get useful lessons. And then secondly, it's always changing. So if somebody says to me, okay, we've got this software development thing figured out, all you have to do is say, well, okay, deploy twice as fast. Now, do you still have it figured out? Oh, turns out not. And if they figure that one out, you just keep going on this for quite a while. That's slicing the deployment cycle. And every time, things change. So I thought, well, let me just lay out what changes, what are the transitions, what enables the transitions, what prevents the transitions between these different deployment cycles. Something that I noticed when I did this, and I was a little surprised by, was in each of these transitions, like say we have an annual deployment process, and we have things kind of figured out, and then we want to move to quarterly. What I noticed about these transitions is you don't drop what you're doing and do something new. First, you have to add some new practices to solve the problems you were already solving, but in a different way. Once you're solving, it's like a quality, defect density, for example. An annual deployment process gets to an acceptable defect density in a certain way. You know, these people do this kind of testing at this kind of time, blah, 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 blah. Well, if you want to get to quarterly, you can't just take that process and squish it by a factor of 4, because you don't have time to do that anymore. You have to find a different way of addressing defect density first, and then you're able to deploy more frequently. So these transitions, there's always this sense of what new am I going to have to do in order to get to a shorter deployment cycle. So the left side column in all these slides will be, okay, what new things do I have to introduce?
Do you consider trade-offs? So I'm going to lose, I'm going to have less defect density, or more?
So yes, thank you. That's the easy part. do I consider trade-offs? So we'll deploy quarterly, but we'll have more defects. My experience with that is that's always a false trade-off. Like, that's the chicken way out. You could say, oh, we'll just, you know, we'll cut the testing period from 2 months to 2 weeks, and we're finished, and we'll just ship even worse garbage than we're shipping now. And it just never works. I think to make the transitions, my experience of how to make the transitions is you have to be contrarian. You have to say, how do we get the defect density down from where it is now, and that enables more frequent deployments. So thinking about it in terms of trade-offs is both ineffective and dishonest, and a little cowardly, as opposed to saying, okay, so we have to get better results in less time. What are we going to do differently? How are we going to rearrange the work? How are we going to eliminate handoffs or spread some phase into an activity or whatever it is so that we get better results? And that's the way towards shrinking deployment time. So I'll just run through the list and for kind of quickly, and if you have questions about it, please ask. So quarterly deployment cycle, in an annual deployment cycle, you've got 2-3 months of testing, which always gets squeezed and doesn't catch so many defects and so on. But you've got a big chunk of time, at least on the initial plan. Quarterly deployment cycle, you got 13 weeks, the same percentage of time, 2 weeks. You don't have time to do a bunch of manual testing in 2 weeks. Now, it doesn't mean that people can't be testing, but you can't rely on kind of this army of monkeys, poke and peek kind of testing to validate software if you want to deploy quarterly. There's just not enough time. So you need to move to some kind of automated acceptance testing. You need to be able to push a button, have some tests run, you get thumbs up, thumbs down. Or for those less adventurous, some percentage. So that's one of the transitions. If I talk to testers, there's this debate about manual testing versus automated testing, and are the costs worth it? Well, if you want to get to quarterly deployments, it's not a debate. It's not a question of are the costs worth it. If you want to get to quarterly deployment cycles, you have to pay the costs. Then we can talk about how to minimize those costs and minimize the cost of the tests over time and so on. But that kind of automated acceptance testing is a prerequisite to being able to deploy quarterly. The same kind of reasoning holds true about the design of software. When I say refactoring, is that a word that people are familiar with? Okay, so refactoring is making big changes in small, safe steps. That's my personal definition. It's the idea that you're going to invest in the design of the software continuously. If you have an annual deployment cycle and you spend 2 months sitting on a sofa, leaning back, maybe a little incense and sitar music in the background, thinking about how the software should be designed, that's fine. In 13 weeks, you don't have time for enough sitar music to come up with a design. So you have to take that sum of the effort that would have gone into upfront design and, like a piece of taffy, pull it out and stretch it across the whole development cycle. Just as with testing, you have to take some of that testing effort and pull it across the entire deployment cycle. So testing comes from one end, design comes from the other, and there's this discipline of changing design without causing disruption, without costing too much, where you're able to do half of a design change and continue making progress if you need to, and that's refactoring. So to make the shift from annual deployment to quarterly deployment, the team needs to learn how to change the design in a disciplined way. Yes?
So there's a possibility that your design is wrong.
So there's a possibility that your design is wrong. There's the absolute certainty that your design is wrong. You just stop. Right and wrong cease to be useful concepts when you're talking about software design. It fits better, it fits worse. And if it starts fitting enough worse, then you make it fit better. and you stop that process when it fits good enough again. So it's going to track. Does that answer your question? Okay. Thanks. So integration. Right, lots of people think of software development as a divide and conquer process, but it's really a divide, conquer, and integrate process. And that integration step, you can do a really good job of dividing and a really good job of conquering and still fail miserably, because that integration step can kill you. And it's so unpredictable. So some form of integration, and this is another one of these taffy things where you just say, okay, we had a month scheduled for integration, let's take that effort and stretch it out across the entire quarter. In the first week, integrating the whole system is going to be relatively easy because the system's this big. Okay, yeah, well, we can integrate that, you know, on Friday. Or maybe we can integrate that at 4 o'clock every day. Or maybe we can integrate that multiple times per day whenever somebody has a well-formed delta to the system, like one that all the tests will still pass when it's finished. Continuous integration has been kind of one of the surprises of extreme programming for me. I'm having introduced this laundry list of things which the younger me kind of shook my finger, you know, you really should be doing all of these things. Now I try and be a little less dogmatic about it. But there was this long list, and it's been curious, been a surprise for me. I've learned a lot seeing how those different items, some of them, continuous integration, right? This is just everybody does it. It's not controversial. I had no idea that that would be one of the things that would go first, but it really has been very popular. Just this idea that, you know, we work for 2 hours on something, we check it in, the system automatically runs all the tests. If a test fails, if we have a regression, our change gets kicked out and we have to resubmit it after changing stuff. Just that whole workflow, which is so completely different than the workflow that I grew up with, you know, where you'd make a branch and you'd live with it for weeks or even months and then try and integrate it. That change in workflow happened at lightning speed compared to some of the other changes that I expected to happen faster. Now, when I started thinking about the transitions, I was thinking as a geek, naturally enough, but I kept running into these other issues that seemed like they were really important to the transitions, but they're organizational issues or business issues. So when I say subscription, what I mean is, if you have an annual deployment process, and what happens 2 months before the deployment is an army of salespeople with golf bags scatter across the globe and try to sell the upgrade to all of the customers, if they do that once a year, it works okay. But that same kind of sales process simply doesn't work with quarterly deployments. There are limits to how much golf anyone can play. So one of the first times I gave this this presentation in Gothenburg, Sweden, somebody came up afterwards and said, I get it now. We've done everything else. We are ready to deploy the software at any given week, and our company refuses to send out new releases of the software except once a year. But it's because we sell upgrades. It would make no sense for the company to deploy more frequently. Whether it's technically possible or not is irrelevant. We don't have a way to make money at a shorter time scale. So with my geek hat on, like, I don't care, but with my, boy, I'd like this software to matter to somebody hat on, I have to acknowledge that moving to a subscription model for software is an enabling factor for making the transition from annual to quarterly deployments. You can do all the good technical work that you want, and you won't deploy more frequently because if there's no way to charge for deploying more frequently. Subscription model, it's very natural. Oh, once a quarter, you'll get a new version of software, of course. It will upgrade automatically, you push a button, whatever it is, but that's N bazillion dollars a year. Oh, okay. People are willing to pay that. So that's the first transition. Yes. So the question is, in enterprise software, it's common to have customers balk at having to deploy more frequently than every 2 years even, to say nothing of 1 year. They may be rolling out to thousands or tens of thousands of machines. They probably don't trust you, not you personally, but like everyone else I've talked to that have had that's had the same bottleneck. Is this real? That was the final part of the question, which I think is a fair enough question. So it depends. That's certainly true. Let me tell you a story. You'll discover I answer lots of questions with stories. I visited a software company in the oil exploration business. And I gave them the proto version of this same rah-rah speech. And they said, no, Kent, you don't understand. We cannot deploy more than once a year because deployment is so painful. I said, well, tell me about it. They said, okay, so here's what happens. We send out a CD and the customer deploys it and it wrecks all their data. So we send out, the next day we send out a patch and that'll repair the damage done by the first deployment, and then there's critical functionality that doesn't work, so the next day we'll probably send out two more revs, one in the morning and one in the afternoon, and then 2 days later we send out another one, and. I said, well, maybe my arithmetic is wrong, but it sounds to me from your story like you deploy 12 times a year. You just pack it into this two-week window. So what would you have to do before you could spread that out? Oh, well, you know, and they could make a list of, they just knew, here are all the disasters that happen every time we deploy, which makes me kind of wonder, like, why haven't they done something about it before now? But that's me as a programmer, not, you know. If I'm thinking of them as humans, then it's perfectly understandable. So one of the things it depends on is building trust with your customers. So I was thinking about OS upgrades, and my wife's strategy and mine are completely different. I trust Apple to improve things on average. So if it says, here's a software update, I just take it. And my wife's belief is that Apple will make things worse in aggregate, so she really doesn't want to do software upgrades unless she absolutely has to, like when I buy a new laptop for her or something like that. One of the gating factors to being able to move from annual to quarterly deployments also is building trust with your customers. Some of that might be infrastructure. So if they have the software deployed on 10,000 of their machines, and you can help them with the infrastructure to make that deployment work smoothly, then you might be able to deploy more frequently. Some of it is how many problems that you cause every time you do a deployment. If you're like this oil exploration company, and I was one of their customers, I don't think I'd ever take an upgrade unless I absolutely desperately needed the new functionality because it just sounded so horrific. Well, there's no necessary reason why that upgrade was so awful. There was a bunch of learning available to the organization that they thought was less important than something else. So they were just dropping all this feedback on the floor, not doing anything about it, but if they had to, if that was more important than packing in the N plus first feature into the next release, they could have addressed all of those issues. They could list, here's exactly what happens when we upgrade. So I guess what I'm saying in that is this real? It can be, but you have to make it real. Sure. Well, to repeat the question, you're still suspicious. It seems like if you're one of 25 vendors and you're all deploying stuff at your own cycle times, the idea that you could end up with a stable system out of all of that just bends credulity. So the observation is the customer has some sort of integration testing cycle, and I've seen it take 3 months or 4 months or 6 months even for their integration cycle. Once you think you're finished, they still don't trust you enough. And they're, you know, in the cases I'm thinking of, they were right not to trust us. That seems to put a natural limit on the cycle time. So yes, maybe you could get down to annual deployments, but if you have a 4-month integration testing in their building, it doesn't, right? If you deployed once a month, they couldn't even handle it. They'd just ignore 6 or 8 of them before they picked up the thread. So I recognize that picture. I've lived in that picture also. But it doesn't seem to me that it's the only way things can be. Yes, that's how things are. And the counterexample I would give, and I hope this doesn't sound flip, but it's the internet, where you've got all these different systems, and they're all calling each other's APIs, and everybody's deploying at different rates, and things work pretty well, given all of that. There's something about that architecture, and I think it's pretty deep stuff, you'd want to understand carefully how that works as well as it does. There's probably lessons from that that you could apply to what you're doing. You might have to re-architect the software that you sell to look quite a bit different, to have different kinds of APIs. But once you did that, if you get the defect rate down enough, then eventually they'll figure it out and they can shorten their integration testing cycle. And then together you can make the whole deployment cycle shorter. And my observation is, okay, so maybe enterprise software is the tailing edge of that. But the current that's pulling everybody towards more frequent deployment doesn't pass you by just because you happen to be on the trailing edge. If you're doing it every 2 years now, 10 years from now, you'll need to do it once a year, maybe. So, I mean, this is my way of thinking. So how can I get in front of that wave instead of having it drag me kicking and screaming? Yeah. The deployment cycle. So the question is, position in the stack, does that affect the deployment cycle? Like, it could be that if I'm at the top of the stack, some little vertical application, yeah, I can ship all the time. But if I'm shipping the hypervisor that everybody absolutely relies on, then I better slow down. So I'm a contrarian enough bastard that I just flip that on its head and I think, wow, if I'm shipping a hypervisor that everybody absolutely relies on all the details of, I want the absolute most feedback that I possibly can get. So I'd like to shorten my deployment cycle much more than I would if I was shipping some little vertical app. But you know, I'm just a backwards person, so that's fine. But that's the thought experiment that immediately jumps into my mind. Like, the more important the software is, the more stable and reliable you need it to be, the more feedback you need. And feedback is all the way through the cycle. So how could I crank that cycle up even further for the most important parts of the software? That would be my tendency addressing that situation. Whether that's realistic or naive or whatever, that's just my thought immediately. Yeah?
Just because you said it's out every quarter doesn't mean everybody needs to start using it. They can choose when you want to do that. And the other point I would say is that you obviously need to provide a value for it. You need to convince them that they want you. But if you provide features that they care about, then they will try to pull whatever they need to do to get this up.
Yeah, so the comment is that customers don't necessarily need to accept every deployment, although we'll get to the place where they do. And then the second comment is, in addition to needing to get the cost of each deployment down, you also need to raise the benefits of deployment. And if it's a positive ROI to a deployment, then a rational customer would choose to do that. And anybody here who has rational customers, please send them my way. Still, that's kind of the way, the direction things should go. Yeah?
I think in response to your point about reliability and just that, or that how critical things are, I mean, the way that we deal with that, right, is that there's sort of two release paths. There's the feature release path, which operates on a much slower time scale, and then there's the, we need to get you a bug fix, And that's like real-time exception handling. Like we need to know like how quickly we can, you know, and how tightly we can optimize that loop. But so, I mean, I guess, what are your thoughts then on the, there are multiple release cycles depending on what needs we're trying to fulfill?
Yeah, so you would expect those patch releases to have a high probability of changing behavior in a very small scope. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah.
Like, this little thing, it needs to be tweaked like this, but nothing else should change, because I'm only changing one line of code, and how bad can that be? Right, but I mean, we know how bad that can be, but still. So at these kind of speeds, which now seems glacial to me, it makes sense to have two different cycle times for that. The shorter your default cycle, deployment cycle is, the less likely you are going to need that emergency cycle time. So if our feature deployment cycle time is 15 minutes, then we don't need patches, like everything's a patch at that point. And then someplace in the middle, there's some kind of crossover. If we have annual deployments for features, then you need a patch cycle unless you don't have any defects. So yeah, you need a patch cycle. If you can deploy frequently enough for little slices of features, then you don't need a separate patch cycle because, I mean, the two just merge together and then there's just some crossover in the middle where the cost of having two cycles is overcome by the value. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, another thought that occurs is the sort of, could I ship and do I ship? And those are actually two independent things. That there's value in saying, like, we're gonna maintain a level of sanity constantly, and we're gonna like constantly be unstable, as opposed to this thing where you like wander off into the woods and suddenly your product is so far from stable and sane that it will take you a long time to get back there. And that's just suffering.
Yeah. Yes.
So I think my question is, how do you expect to get testing cycles down so low? So I can imagine, like, is this sort of a pipeline process that you see that you cut a release and the testing finishes and then, okay, things seem stable enough, let's ship it? Is that the goal? And do you think that the logic is going to work out that way? Because people are going to think, oh, well, tomorrow should be more stable, and they'll just keep trying to bunch up their releases at least. I mean, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, so it's tempting to pipeline these kind of processes, to say, let's take this, we'll break it into two phases, we'll pipeline them. And while that's intellectually easy to understand, in my experience, that's one of the last tricks that I try. Because what always happens is that the phase two interrupts phase one prime, right? So we're going on to develop the new set of features, and then those doggone pesky testers come and say, oh, by the way, you have a bug and you need to fix it. And you, oh, God, not a bug. And then you completely lose the thread. And so it's really quite expensive to pipeline, even though there's a lot of theoretical advantages. So it's common for me to I don't give advice. Point out the opportunity there. It's common for me to point out the opportunity to just bring the phases together and say, you know, there's just so much crosstalk that these aren't really phases. They're not working as separate phases because they're just interacting with each other all the time. So let's just synchronize them, even if that means that the cycle's going to be longer, and then we'll see if we can optimize from that. Does that answer your question or respond to it? Okay. Yeah.
I wanted to point out an example of this with people skipping deployment. The Linux kernel releases quarterly, roughly, and then distros frequently release semi-annually, picking an appropriate kernel release. And then people deploying it, especially in companies, don't tend to deploy more often than about annually, so they have a couple releases of the distro to choose between. And one big advantage of this sort of cycle is that, you know, every release process is going to have some release that's a dog and has major bugs. By having fast cycles down at the low level, it lets the people above choose one of a couple of different releases to work from to be more confident with their stability and cascade on up.
Yeah, I think at these kind of the transitions of these kind of cycle times, that strategy makes a lot of sense. Internal release, external release. As the time scales shrink, it becomes harder and harder to manage. What happens when you have 20 released versions that people just kind of haven't picked up yet? And some people have and some people haven't, and you get a bug report and you have to fix the bug in, you know, number 17, and then you have to backport it and forward port it, and it becomes really expensive. So at some point, as the cycle tightens, that lack of synchronization, I think, becomes too expensive, but certainly for these kind of time frames, it works. Okay. Thanks for the questions, by the way. Makes it much more fun. Okay, so you're releasing quarterly. Whew. And the boss comes and says, we need to get to monthly deployments. And you think, oh, crud, how are we going to do this? And here's the second thing that I learned when I put this model together. It's that new practices come in as you tighten the deployment cycle. And old practices, even some that were really important, become impediments and need to be discarded in order to further shrink the cycle. They become like training wheels, and you think, well, if I'm only going this speed, training wheels are fine, but if I try and corner at high speed and with training wheels, I'm gonna crash. So you have to take the training wheels off. And training wheels is a little bit pejorative. I'm still searching for that analogy, I promised you, but I'll get there. So now we have two columns, things that you need to add and things that you need to subtract. And when I say you need to, I mean this is my way of thinking about it. You can do whatever you want. I'm clear about that. So moving to monthly deployment, one of the questions was about how realistic is this? Can you get quality? At monthly deployment cycles, you don't have time to hand the software off to be tested to catch the majority of defects. You've got 4 weeks. And just like people being people, handing something off, handing a responsibility off and getting it back has a certain transaction cost. And that doesn't get faster with technology or anything else. That's just like people stuff. So you can't expect someone else to catch the defects as a programmer and get to an acceptable defect density. So one of the changes here is programmers need to start testing their own work. This was the example I used at the beginning. At annual deployment cycles, programmers are producing lots of defects that are caught by other people, and it's a pretty sensible thing to say, well, programmers can't be trusted to test their own software because that's the experience. I think it's kind of insulting, but it also matches the facts. If you're deploying once a month, though, and somebody says, well, of course, programmers can't be trusted to test their own software. We don't have time to hand the software to someone else to be tested, to get the feedback, to make the change, to give it back, and have the change validated. Most of the testing, most of the reduction in defect density has to happen before the programmer says, done. In order to it's just the arithmetic. Otherwise, you can't fit into 4 weeks. So this is one of the changes, and it's one of the ones that I actually like. I mean, even if I'm running at slower deployment cycles, I like testing my own software. I like that feeling of being able to sleep at night. But if you want to deploy monthly, I don't see any alternative. At a monthly deployment, you don't have time for a paper-based or document-based status information flow. Once a week, we prepare the status document, and it goes to somebody, and they read it, and a week later, somebody else gets it, and uh-oh, we just missed the deployment. Instead, there needs to be some kind of face-to-face, verbal, real-time status update. You got 4 weeks, you got 20 working days, you got 20 chances to have some feedback between teams about how things are going. Well, if you only have, if you need to have a fair amount of feedback because stuff's changing all over the place, you want to use all 20 of those cycles, you're just going to have to get together at 10:15 every morning, stand around a board, and say, here's how things are, what surprises did we get, what's changed, who's done, who's ready for something new, what do we do next, are we really done with what we were doing? Have to quickly have those kind of conversations. Now, when I say cards on a wall, this is for planning purposes. I'm a big believer in a democratic planning process where anybody can change the plan. If the plan changes and it takes somebody a day, the project manager, let's say, a day to get the plan change, fire up Microsoft Project or something like it, do some edits, publish the changes, have it reviewed. One plan change can easily take the whole month. So it's not that cards on a wall are good because they're retro or because I want to sell paper. What's important here is an observation that my wife made. As the cycles shrink, the overhead of switching from one activity to another has to shrink. So if we have a year-long deployment cycle and it takes somebody a couple of days to update the plan, it's fine. If you have a one-month deployment cycle, you need to update the plan inside that month, sure, certain to happen, then just grabbing a card, scribbling something on it, and tacking it back up, the overhead of changing the plan has to shrink. It's not to say that you couldn't have a computer system do the same thing, but the critical measure is what are the task switching costs as you want to, say, move from testing to changing the plan. Oh, we found a new bug. We need to change the plan so we have space to fix it. Okay, we've done that. If you have a one-month deployment cycle, that plan change thing, that has to happen within a few minutes. It can't be something that takes an hour or a day to do. And this paper use is another one of these business implications. As the deployment cycle gets shorter and shorter, the subscription model helps you have a quarterly cycle. But what it doesn't really do for you as a team is give you a lot of feedback. Money is the best feedback, right? Because if a customer gives you money, they're serious, right? They meant it. They can say, oh yes, this is a great idea. I love it. This is super. I really want that. Fine, fine, fine. But when they show you the money, then you know that they really like it. So money can be trusted, oh, and you can spend it too, which is really cool. So introducing a pay-per-use business model it isn't so much that you make so much more money with pay-per-use. Like a stock exchange is a pay-per-use model. Every trade you pay the exchange 2.1 cents or whatever it is. The more trades, the more money. The fewer trades, the less money. And there's a spectrum from, you know, all you can eat monthly plan to you pay for every millisecond. But the further you can move the business model towards pay per use, the more information is available to the team. One of the cool things about working at Facebook is the connection with the business is very visible. You can say, boy, I make some change in the system, what happens to ad revenue? Very, very direct. None of this arrows in the dark, you know, where we develop for 12 months and then people start buying more or they start buying less. And you think, well, what'd I do? You don't know. If you have a pay-per-use business model, you can have very direct connections. Oh, change this layout, change this color, change this flow, and I make more money. The money's cool because you can spend it, but it's also really, really refined information. So in that switch to monthly deployments, that pay-per-use business model provides a lot more information. Now here's where we get to having to start to throw out some of the things, even treasured things from a slower deployment cycle, but that become impediments at these shorter cycle times. The first one's a QA department. So this is a hard one. The introduction of the QA department oftentimes is the first step towards adulthood in software development organizations. Okay, so now we have some people that are actually certain to test the software before it goes out to somebody else. And things get better. And people think, ah, we brought the QA department in, things got better, so therefore the QA department's good. Well, by the time you get to 4 weeks, 20 working days, the organizational overhead of handing off some change to be checked, binka, binka, bink, has to go up, to go across from the VP of development to the VP of QA, and then ding, 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 down to somebody who's actually going to test it, and the feedback comes back. Just that organizational overhead becomes too much. At monthly deployment, still need testers, no questions, but the testers need to be part of teams, and their primary loyalty needs to be to the team and not to the function. So that's some that enables it. Now, if it's just you're the tester and I'm the programmer, and so I say, oh, I think this is finished. What do you think? And 2 hours later, because you're sitting right next to me, 2 hours later, you tell me, yes, Kent, that checks out. That's okay. We can fit those kind of conversations inside of a month. What we can't do is bug comes in, triage, change request board, right, that overhead, that cycle, just responding to a bug can take longer than our deployment cycle. So you can't do that. Now I put this at monthly. So that last comment is a challenge to that, and I need to think about this. I've certainly, exactly where this goes. At about monthly deployments, having multiple deployed versions in the field starts to get really expensive. And it's this, the bug was, you know, we have 10 deployed versions in the field because some people are a little behind and some people are even more behind. Now we get a bug report, this is gonna be heavy. Does this bug repro in all 10 deployed versions? And the faster the cycle gets, the worse this problem gets. At some point, maybe it's not monthly, maybe it's weekly, but at some point, it becomes really valuable to say, no, if you're gonna use the software, there's the software. and this is the one deployed version. One of the advantages that websites or software as a service have is this just goes away. There's no deployed software, so when Facebook rolls a new version, it's the version, the version. There's the version, and you don't have to think about, oh, which one is this? Now, it's not, the real picture isn't quite that simple, but you can control the costs a lot better if there's one place to deploy than if there's 1,000 with different organizations with different priorities. Yes? So the question is, does this discount alpha and beta versions? There are different reasons for having alpha and beta. There's alpha, which means, I don't know if this is valuable at all. Would you please tell me? And the more of those, the better. From my perspective, the faster, if you're in an uncertain market, the faster you can experiment, the better. There's alphas and beta that says, we kind of think this works, but we're not quite sure. And I'd really like to take that feedback loop and put it into the deployment cycle instead of kind of tagging it onto the end. It may take you a year to figure out how to do that. But, like, experimentation, the more the better. We're not quite sure, then get sure. And then you can shrink the deployment cycle further. Yes?
When you say monthly release cycle, do you also mean no project longer than a month? Because I can imagine a world where you do monthly release cycles, but a developer might go off and work for many months on a project and then simply plug it into the appropriate release when done, in which case the only thing that has to fit in a month is the final integration and test.
Yes. So no, I don't mean no feature longer than a month. I mean, or put another way, yes, features can take longer than a month, even if you're doing monthly release cycles. What I notice myself doing is I try to make my work easy. So I say, well, here's a two-month feature. But if only the system were structured like this, it would only be a one-month feature. And it'll take me a month to restructure the system. And then I have a one-month feature.
It's so, good if you can get it, but I suspect not all solution problems will fit themselves into nice, neat one-month, or as you're going to get in a couple more slides, one-hour size buckets.
So I would agree that it hasn't been our habit as a community to figure out how to fit stuff into smaller and smaller slices. The question is whether that's a necessary condition or we just haven't figured out how to do that yet. And that's seems like an open question for me. The more I try to slice stuff finer and finer, the more ways I find of slicing stuff. So I'm hopeful, but that's me. Documents as the primary carrier of design information. Monthly deployments, you don't have time to update details of the design every month, or you'd spend longer than a month doing it. You could have overview documents that talk about the design as a whole, but the burden of communication but programmer to programmer about the design of the system needs to come from social interaction. I know, social interaction and programmers. It doesn't go together, but it's just a habit. It could. It can. The code and tests that are written deliberately to communicate with other people and not just with a computer. And an attitude of removing unnecessary complexity. If you can do those things, then the amount of stuff that needs to be in a document gets much, much smaller. That's the strategy that I've used. A big change request process. Again, you don't have time to have a giant cycle that takes you 2 weeks to figure out a change. Separate teams for analysis, separate team for build. There needs to be the team, and what the team does is deploy the software once a month, because you can't afford these handoffs between organizations. Yes, Armando.
Can you talk a little about the depth of the design document? What takes its place? You know, when new people come in, is there something other than code that they look at to understand the big picture?
So the depth of the design document, that's a little more dramatic than I put it, but it's, I suppose it's honest, so that has that advantage. So here's my observation. Every design document I've ever read that I really needed to be accurate was wrong. You can look at that and say, well, keep the design document accurate. Except I observe that people don't do that. So maybe it's because people are dishonest sleazeballs, or maybe it's that it's really impossible. So if that's true, if detailed design information just is impossible to maintain in some separate document, what do you do? And I encourage social activities like pair programming, design reviews at whiteboards, conversations over coffee. So the biggest component is social. You know, if I just feel comfortable asking you questions, why in the world is this like this? And you feel comfortable answering that, then that's stuff we don't necessarily have to write down. Then this focus on communication with other human beings. As a programmer, it's your job to communicate with other people and the computer. That goes a long way towards communicating. And having tests around, detailed tests around, is a great way of communicating design information. So those are the vehicles that I prefer. Yes.
It's fine to say, why don't I ask you how this works? What if I ask you 6 months later and you don't have it all in your head anymore? Do we need some way to keep the context over the long term?
Well, so what happens if I'm gone?
Yeah.
I wrote it 6 months later. You want to find out.
I was being polite and not referring to your death.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. Well, what happens now? You go read the code. You make some experiments. You try some stuff out. So how good could we make that process? That kind of organic, I mean, that's what we observe programmers doing in the wild. So we could either say, it shouldn't be this way, or we could say, oh, well, this is what happens. How good can we make it?
Or I guess another way to think of it is, we're not doing that job very well right now anyway, so as part of this, as part of shortening the cycle, we have to think about stuff we ought to be thinking about anyway, which is how to fix that.
Yes, yes. So I'll take one more question and then I'll move on, because I'm getting short on time. Yeah, so Wiki is a technology that you can apply to this. The Facebook experience is we have a Wiki, there's a lot of information in it, and it's occasionally useful. Wiki is where ideas go to die. Yes, but so interactively. Yeah, okay, so I have several more transitions. 10 minutes to do it, so we'll just divide it and go. So let me talk about the switch to weekly deployments. Actually, two-way data migration is not how things are done at Facebook. Instead, so we have to do data migrations all the time. We had a structure, we thought it was great, now it's not anymore. And, oh, by the way, we have hundreds of millions of users worth of data. What do you do? In that case, we've got this three-phase strategy for migrating data. Double writing, so you write it in the old format and the new format. Then double reading to make sure that you read the same thing from the new format and the old format. And then you start using the new one. at which point you can throw away the old one. And we do, we have, I don't know how many bazillion servers devoted to exactly this task. And it's ongoing, it happens every day, a little bit all the time. And that process, I think, is actually superior to this two-way data migration, where you say, yes, we can change it, but we can always change it back. Here, we're holding the data in both formats at the same time until the risk goes away, and then we eliminate the old one. Yes. Yeah, so the question is, how long do you live in that state where you have the data in both formats?
Well, that's like an incompressible time that you can't
Yes.
change cycle.
Yeah, the change cycle can't get any smaller than that. Now, the nice thing is it's quite decoupled to most of the other activities. If you're the feature that depends, say, on some new index that you can't compute from the way the data was before, then yes, you're blocked until the migration's finished, until you can trust the new format. But most everything else just says, I write, I read, is the same interface as it was before. So typical times to live in both formats, this is the kind of thing that I probably shouldn't talk about, so it's like weeks and months. It's not years, and it's not minutes. So something like that. What else do I want to say about this? Oh, I take a pot shot at venture capital. But if you get the cycle short enough, then your mistakes are small enough that you don't need a big pile of money to tide you over your big mistakes because you're making small mistakes. So VC comes with a lot of strings attached, and I'd just as soon not have to deal with those. I'll let you ask questions about this after I've gone through the next two. Weekly to daily deployment. Some form of immunization. So if this is similar to the comment earlier, some of your deployments are going to be dogs, guaranteed. So how expensive are the dogs? If you're deploying daily, then it has to be really easy to roll back. Or it has to be really quick to fix the problem and roll forward. There are teams doing it both ways. So there are teams who, they've got some deployment cycle, everybody kind of folds their hands and watches the deployment, and if something goes wrong, they'll fix the problem and continue. Now that sounds crazy and risky to me, and I haven't ever done it, but there are people that I trust who are working in that style, so okay. I prefer the one where you just automatically roll back to the previous deployment and then you fix whatever problems you have. One of the things when you can get to a daily deployment cycle is that you can stop having user interface arguments. I never realized, until I started doing A/B testing, I never realized how much time I wasted on arguments for user interface design. Oh, the font should be like this. No, the font should be like that. If you're set up to quickly get data on the real user's real reaction to the two options, user interface design is fun again. Because you just say, oh, let's just try your butt ugly font and see what happens. Oh, ha ha ha, that's what I thought. Instead of having to have a big, big fluff, fluff, fluff about some user interface design decision that you don't like. At some point, as the deployment cycle compresses, I see people with complicated pipelines for deployment. Well, we deploy to the functional testing servers, and then we deploy to the these, and then the this, and then the that. And at some point, when the deployment cycle gets small enough, having all those many, many stages is too expensive. You still need to find a way to reduce the risk of any given deployment causing a bunch of damage. At Facebook, there's a video on the push process, and the Facebook engineering blog had a good entry on the push process a month or two ago. So this is coming from that. We push to a few machines that are only used in-house. If that looks good, then we push to a bunch more web servers that are taking real traffic. And then we watch the logs very carefully for new fatal errors that weren't appearing before. And only if we don't see any significant problems and if the people who are deploying that day give the thumbs up, does it go to the next crowd and the next crowd. So that's how we reduce the risk of these dog deployments. But this big, long pipeline just takes too long. Having a separate, okay, so this isn't true at Facebook. We have an ops team that's the best. And it's really valuable because of the scale that we work at. On smaller teams, I'm a huge fan of DevOps. I want to have the beeper in my own pocket if I'm developing the features. Because the feedback loop is just so much clearer. I'm going to be very, very careful if it's my kid's birthday party that's going to get interrupted because I made a mistake. So, again, if you have weekly deployments and you have an ops team and the feedback takes a while to get back, it's okay. At some point, as you shrink the deployment cycle further and further, just the handoff between the two becomes too expensive. And the best teams that I talk to, they're operating their own software. Doesn't mean you don't have ops people, but there isn't a separate team with a different set of agendas. It's the team, and they operate the software as well as develop it. I was looking for an example of a practice that didn't make sense and that did make sense for a while and that doesn't make sense anymore, and stand-up meetings were the first one that came to my mind. If you're deploying daily, you can't wait for 10:15 to find out what's going on. So the team has to find other social feedback mechanisms to find out what's going on, whatever those are going to be. IRC channels, like Facebook groups is something that I've seen used, and so on. There has to be somewhere, just sit in the same room. Whew, crazy idea, but maybe we could try it. Maybe it would work. If you can just find out what's going on, then it would be kind of a stupid formality to stand up once a day and communicate, because you're communicating all the time. So. Here's where I reached the edge of my knowledge. I've worked for extended periods with daily deployments, and I love it. It just feels so nice. You get to the end of the day, you prepare yourself for deployment, and out it goes. I haven't worked very much with hourly deployment, so I don't have lessons that I can say, oh, here's what you have to do, here's what you can't do. That is the new frontier. But it's being done at larger and larger scales. Now, Facebook is somewhere between weekly and daily. We have some deployment. We have deployments every day, but we have a once a week deployment that's bigger, that tends to be larger every Tuesday. So we're someplace in the middle there. And I think I'll go to questions now.
Okay. Thanks, Ken. So I was wondering, as a old Smalltalk fan, I was hoping at some point you would get to a live image where the deployment is instantaneous, right? The problem, of course, is it's live image on my machine. It's not distributed, and it's not shared across, and it probably doesn't scale. So is that maybe where we want to get to as a research community? Where things are just live, I make changes, it's immediate.
Well, I certainly want to see push on green. So I did this commercial product, JUnit Max. Every time you save your Java code, all the tests run, and you get immediate feedback within seconds. Just like syntax errors, you get test errors. If all those tests are green, I would like to just deploy that every time. So that's, but that's not quite as crazy as I want to be. What I really want to be is, so that's my stuff, and you're on a separate code base working on your own stuff. So what if we were really working on the same exact thing, and I could see your edits and you could see my edits at the same time? That's the crazy, no, can't, that's stupid, it couldn't possibly work, so go make that work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
On the next last, on the previous one, you're referring to keystoning. I am not familiar with that term.
Oh, so this is what if you have a two-month project, but you you don't want to add the button before it works. So keystoning is, so take all the tasks required for this, the feature, slice them up and rearrange them so that the user interface changes come absolutely last. And that's the keystone in the arch, right? You're building the arch and then you put the button in and then people say, oh, wow, that was fast. You say, yeah, yes. I mean, we prepared for it to be fast. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thanks. Okay.
Yeah.
It looks like when we are moving from like yearly to monthly and monthly to weekly, et cetera, we need also people to communicate much faster. Does that imply that we can't have now people working from home or having teams spread over multiple time zones or try to outsource parts of the development to other countries? Do we need to have now everyone co-located in the same place to be able to go at a certain pace? And in what development cycle do you see the limits of having geographically distributed teams?
So I think geographic distribution is a stretching force. It's easier to deploy less frequently if you're geographically distributed. So, but it's kind of, I think it's kind of elastic. So I work remotely at Facebook, and that's very, very unusual. There's only a handful of us. There's, I don't know, however many hundred engineers, and they're all in Palo Alto. And then there's one satellite office in Seattle, and then there are very few people scattered around. I feel that. I'm less effective because I'm remote. But I fit in pretty well with the deployment cycle. That hasn't been a problem. I'm able to deploy daily, which is my habit, because things are set up to support that. I think at some point, well, I know that there are open source projects that run very distributed and have very short cycle times, but I think if you were a sociologist and you studied those, you would discover that people, there are lots and lots of rituals and expectations and mythology and all the supporting human stuff to make that work. So I think it is a stretching force. It pushes deployments longer. If you can have everybody sit in the same room, it's certainly going to be easier to shrink the cycles. But it's not a black and white situation from my perspective. One more.
Okay. I think the one thing you alluded to but weren't very explicit on is, I think lots of what have helped and encouraged us to move forward in this direction is more software being services as opposed to shrink wrap or CD or downloads. But I think there's some of this even in ship software. So like, you know, if you play your favorite Morpig, you don't have an option of upgrading. When they push an upgrade on you, you take it because that's part of the experience. And stuff like Firefox and Chrome, they have different cycles, but they have programs where they push the app is very often, and they have built more and more, I don't think it's quite seamless, but more and more of the infrastructure to take upgrades in the background, make you upgrade or piecemeal without having to interrupt you and make that like so much of a problem. Thank you.
Yes, I agree.
You have good managers. Open to get your question mark.
Well, there wasn't a question.
Any comments on that?
Yeah.
Question mark?
Yes, that seems the trend to me. So continuous deployment is stretching further and further. And that's, I think, both a cause and effect of this shift to smaller deployment cycles.
Thank you.